Live from the old Austin Opry House in Austin, Texas, it's the After Reality TV Podcast.
This is the final roast, final roast tonight.
But first.
When people stop being polite.
Shut up.
And start getting real.
Job is spoken.
Killed it. Good job.
Welcome to the After Reality TV Podcast. I'm Spencer Kitley.
And I'm Daniel Oler.
It is a sad week now that Bachelor in Paradise has left our television screens. We'll not have the Bachelor franchise in our lives again until January. Nevertheless, we're excited to rehash the week and the season that it was on the pod this week. We'll also preview the upcoming reality season, discuss all the latest from the Big Brother house, and look around and see what else is going on. Dano, it was a great week in reality TV. Before we get started, let everybody know where they can find us online.
You can hit us on Twitter at AfterRealityPod or like our Facebook page, the After Reality TV Podcast.
And a couple weeks ago, we had the treat of having Matt Grafe, Fantasy Four Reality's resident guru, on. You hear us talk about these guys all the time, and we're excited to have Matt back again. So welcome, Matt.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Welcome.
No problem. Happy to have you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Like you said, I'm a little bit sad that Bachelor in Paradise has ended. But we're looking forward to Survivor and everything else to come. That'll keep us ready for next season.
Gotcha. And I think Survivor's going to be a good one this go-around. Anytime they bring wholesale batches of returners back, it has a different vibe to that. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
I agree. They've really been promoting this one with basically the best of people who never won, so it should be exciting.
So and Dan's one of the harshest critics of Survivor, right? I'm more of a long-time Survivor guy. I did maybe 10 seasons, and then I took maybe 10 or 12 seasons off, but then I've been back probably the last 6 or 7 seasons of it. Dan holds it to a much higher standard than what might be attainable.
Well, I hold it to a challenge standard, and it's far below that.
Well, that's true. You know, it's the basic premise is the same, but it's a very different vibe.
And it's harder for them to get that same vibe because we have established relationships with the likes of Johnny Bananas and CT and Wes and these guys. Where for the most part, Survivor, it's you don't have the benefit of an existing relationship there, and you're not getting big snippets of character development either, the way we have over on the challenge. And total tangent here, but Matt, Dan, and I discuss this all the time. If the challenge also had an additional 30-minute either webisode or actual television on another night where it was just about social dynamics of what's going on in the house, would you be a fan of that?
Oh, of course. I think that would actually be perhaps more entertaining than the episode where they actually compete in some fashion.
There's so much competition now that you don't get a lot of that.
It's right. I mean, they have quick snippets of them in a club every episode, and then they'll have some sort of fight in the house. And those are always the best parts.
Yeah,
absolutely agree. And a show we do get a lot of that on is Bachelor in Paradise, so I'm going to go ahead and dive in there. First thing I want to talk about is rather broad, but we've had 2 seasons of Bachelor in Paradise now. We had Marcus and Lacey get married off of last season, but at least still together. We end this season with at least an engagement, maybe more there, and then maybe more in other relationships. What does that say about the success of this show versus the success of Bachelor and Bachelorette? I'll start with you, Matt.
Yeah, I think it speaks well for the Bachelor in Paradise franchise. We should just keep running that. They So yeah, you've had two potential marriages come out of it, a couple of other relationships that seem somewhat friendly. The Bachelorette has had some success over recently. The Bachelor, I think, less so. I ran the numbers on this once, but I think The Bachelorette has more success, which probably speaks to, you know, women going on there for the right reasons, for lack of a better word. And the men who have decided to participate on that might just be there to find someone, as opposed to just traveling the country and drinking and having a good time. But yeah, I think The Bachelor in Paradise, it seems like those people who join are there for one of two reasons, just to extend their television fame or to find a relationship. And the girls this go around seemed like they wanted a relationship.
Yeah, well, and to your point on The Bachelorette success, and it's been really loaded up heavy on recent seasons of The Bachelorette, and even The Bachelor has been a little bit more successful of late. Daniel, I have my own theories on Bachelor in Paradise, but what's your take?
I don't know. I do agree that people come on there for two. I still think in this season kind of ended what we kind of were talking about, that people really – I think the guys came on this show for like a spring fling. You know, it was kind of spring break, and I think that was the guy. I think not every guy was like that, but you could tell the girls were more invested this season than the guys were, even to the end.
Yeah, so my theory here is this show is so different than The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, because on The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you're there for, what is it, 3 months, 5 months? But you're only getting bits and pieces with
one person.
The person, right? Mm-hmm. Here, if you're Jade and Tanner, and you've been there for 5 weeks, probably most of the day, every day, it's way more interaction than anyone's ever getting, A, on Bachelor or Bachelorette, or B, even when you start a relationship with someone, right? And it's not to the extent of something like Big Brother, where you're confined to this house, and it's just, hey, what's convenient? there's definitely a different dynamic that you don't get on The Bachelor and Bachelorette, and that's real relationship development there. So I think that gives them better odds in general for success.
I know. I think that's a great point. And the other point to piggyback off of that is that on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, you've got 24 other people all targeting the exact same person, and it becomes more of a one-upsmanship than it is actually forming a relationship, whereas on Bachelor in Paradise, you know, you've got multiple options, and you might actually pair off with someone you have something in common with as opposed to just whoever the target is.
Right, and to that point, some news came down here in the last couple days. There had been these rumors that Ben Higgins had been dating Tinley, but they kind of had to break things off because he was selected as The Bachelor, and rumors that Tinley was actually going to go on The Bachelor. Now it's kind of come out that Elevenly, as I like to call her, she likes to be pursued a little more than she likes to do the chasing, so she's not going to be on that season. If she does show up there, it would be a surprise after kind of the article I was reading.
Oh, God. I don't know. Tenley seems actually pretty sweet, but I think we've had enough of Tenley.
I have no idea how someone is not nailed down a relationship with Tenley in the 7 years maybe we've known her from reality TV.
It probably says more about Tinley than it does the guy she's meeting, that she's had multiple opportunities to meet people and she can't nail them down.
Yeah. Did we ever find out, was that breakup with Kipton, was that her or him? Do we know that?
I have no answer.
I don't know either. I get the sense, though, that Kipton made the decision. That's based on nothing except for Tinley's appearance this season. But I would say, given her immediate choice of Joshua over Michael, that it's a Tinley problem. Because Michael is this, like, successful lawyer, college grad, lives somewhere desirable. And Joshua is a welder who lives in Wyoming or Idaho, I think.
Yes.
And without blinking, Tenley was like, yeah, Joshua, definitely Joshua.
Boy, and when Michael had come there solely to be with Tenley, and they had a great date, or at least produced to be a great date, and, yeah, very good point. And another interesting couple this season has been, and I use the word couple lightly, Jared and Ashley I, or Ashley Iaconetti. And we saw last week, going into this week,
the word acquaintances. They're more like acquaintances than a couple. Like,
we'll go with it. Okay. And we saw Ashley I asking Chris Harrison for this fantasy suite thing, which not a whole lot going on there. They go to the fantasy suite, and the telltale sign when they walked into this place was when Jared said, hey, do you want to take a seat on the bed?
Yeah, exactly.
They spend a lot of time in production with this relationship throughout the season, and it becomes very apparent that Jared is going to break up with Ashley I, which he does, again. And I think Ashley I is probably pretty good reality TV. Would you have her back season 3 of Bachelor in Paradise?
I would, yes. I think they should have her back, and they probably have. Someone has had this disgusting conversation in their offices about bringing her back until she actually does lose her virginity on national television.
You're going to stock the pond for her?
Plus, they love the crying part. So, yeah, I mean, as long as they don't bring back her sister, I think they're good.
Well, and that's how you win your Fantasy for Reality League. You get those crying points.
Yeah, I tried to look at where everyone finished. Who the most successful player was. Carly actually led all scorers with 510 points.
Very good.
Followed by Tenley at 480, Kirk at 470, and then Ashley coming in at 460.
Okay.
So, that's surprising to me, actually, that Carly was the big winner.
Very surprising. I benefited from having Carly and Tenley and Kirk all on my team this season. So, and again, we only went with the originals. So Dan now owes me lunch because it was a swift boot to the backside this go around. But more on that later. I want to talk about Justin.
Hey, before we move on, I want to talk about Ashley I. So okay, ABC. ABC spent the whole season talking about her losing her V card, and not just losing her V card, but maybe being pregnant. And that was like every promo this whole season. So
where was the pregnant thing ever on the show?
It wasn't. They pulled a chapter from the MTV book and just started like throwing stuff in there. So I mean, is there something you should question, like that one, ABC's promoting this girl losing her virginity on TV? And two, to the fact that she never even did, that they're just like, they keep like shoving it in our face, like, is she going to lose her virginity? Like, it's kind of creepy when you think about it. This girl, like, and half the time Chris Harrison's like, is this the night that Ashley loses her virginity? I was like, it's kind of creepy when like a 45-year-old guy just keeps harping on it. You're like, I felt a little uneasy by the end of the season, the way that they just kept pushing it and pushing it. Like, this is a 25, this is someone's daughter. This chick is like under 30. Like, maybe we should like pull back on this a little bit.
Maybe Chris Harrison is angling to be that guy.
Maybe. I don't know. It was very uneasy by the end of the season when they kept every promo featured this. Nothing happened, but they kept hitting on it.
I agree. Chris Harrison would have probably a really difficult time dating about 95% of the people that go on this show after he sees them at their worst.
And I would hope that they would have a difficult time dating Chris Harrison. Because, I mean, Jesus, if you come away from this finding him to be, you know, worth pursuing, I think you'd be better off with Joe, I think.
I could see Claire maybe latching on to Chris Harrison.
Yeah, me too.
So let's move on. I want to talk about Justin, who he was a late arrival, became a kind of involved in a weird situation. We had Cassandra, a.k.a. Rodney Stuckey's baby mama, arrives on, I don't know when it was, but she's the final person to arrive in Paradise, and she's interested in Justin. And she's walking in just after Jacqueline, who kind of came in and shook some things up, had asked him out as a bit of a last resort on a date. And now he's booked for two dates on one day. And he goes and circles back to Jacqueline and calls things off to go on a date with Cassandra. What? Why can't he go on two dates?
Good question. I think because they really, and this may have been my favorite moment of the episode, wanted him to go back and just reject Jacqueline. That was pure entertainment, just standing, having her watch him rationalize why he was changing his mind, as if it was the kid thing, and not just the Cassandra is super hot and Jacqueline not so much.
So, her face, when he told her that, was, you were doing what? Which, it's kind of a shame to me that Jacqueline wasn't there earlier in the season, because I think she's pretty good TV. But that's not something we got to benefit from. That was her, I think, her third appearance on the franchise.
Yeah.
So, Justin and Cassandra, they went on their date. They went horseback riding, blah, 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 blah. Seemed to hit it off. But as we get past that, we get to the cocktails and roses and this mass exodus. Mikey tells Juelia that he just isn't feeling it and that he thinks they're nothing more than friends. I mean, this is a crushing blow to someone who, like, thought that they amazingly had rekindled something in a matter of just a few days.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Mikey, I never got the sense that the two of them really... I think he was right there. I mean, I think he knew how he felt. The sad part is that I think he knew that before he came back. And came back because, you know, how could you turn down an extra few weeks in Mexico?
Exactly.
But I don't think he ever had any expectations. I mean, he was just clinging to anyone who would have him there.
I agree.
Yeah, and I wish more people were honest like this, like Mikey was. He crushes Juelia, but he feels bad about it. He seems pretty torn up about it. And she wasn't, I guess I should say, the two of them aren't the only ones that go home. Of course, you have Kirk and Carly, Tanner and Jade, Nick and Sam, Joshua and Elevenly, and Justin and Cassandra pair off. But then Dan leaves due to a lack of love, or maybe he had just played every option out possible because he was meandering and stirring the pot all season. And then Mikey T tries to hang around. He gets rejected by McKenzie.
I'm sorry. I retract my previous statement about the Jacqueline reversal being the best moment. That was the best moment. McKenzie getting a rose and then rejecting the rose and walking out was classic.
We're talking about half-wit McKenzie.
I mean,
Dan, I'm surprised she has the gall to pull this thing out here. I mean, she's 22 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah. But she's got a baby at home, like half the cast. I think once the ball started rolling, I think it got a lot easier just to be like, yeah, you're right, this isn't going anywhere. And you're right. I mean, Mikey T and McKenzie weren't going to go anywhere.
That's not my point, though. These people are TV whores, for lack of a better word. And... very surprising, but Dan leaves, Mikey T leaves, and then following him out the door, of course, McKenzie, Ashley I, Amber, Jacqueline, Chelsea, and Ashley S. I kind of feel like Ashley S., outside of that, what she had with Dan, well, I guess I was going to say she didn't really have a fair shake on this thing, but I guess she probably did because she screwed things up with Nick as well. Great TV, though.
Oh, definitely. Nick, I wasn't sure how he transitioned from, like how Samantha sort of dodged Dan and then went to Nick. Did they never kind of closed out the Sam Dan thing?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, she was done with Dan. Dan seemed to accept this. Nick, and I, by the way, and I still don't think she has any interest in Nick either. I mean, the scenes of her
they're still together. They're posting pictures on Instagram this week together.
Unbelievable. I mean, could she have been less interested in kissing him throughout? I mean, or maybe I was just picking up on something weird, but it seemed like she was...
Seemed the same to me as well.
Okay, good.
And I think that Sam is, I mean, just when it's all about the all for the gram in real life, it's all for the TV, it's all for the paradise when she's on the TV. So she does what she needs to do or doesn't do what she needs to do. Maybe she's trying to do a quick image change mid-season after she had been, her parade had been rained on so heavily. Out of this group of people that have been on this season, assuming none of them are engaged or married in a serious relationship come next May, who from this cast would you like to see back next season?
Well, I think you're right. I think I want Ashley I back. She's sort of entertaining and funny, and I don't think, you know, I got a little sick of the crying, but I think I want her back. I don't mind Carly. She's kind of humorous. I think Kirk and Carly should both be back and pursue other people. That would be that they have to sort of pull that off. I think. I mean, Samantha sort of. Cassandra maybe. I don't. Dan, I like Dan. You guys?
Yeah, I would like to see maybe both Ashleys. I'd like to see more of Ashley S. to see what we can get out of her. I'm always a fan of Claire, but she said she's not doing any more, so we'll have to write that one off.
But then can we have raccoons? We have to have Claire, or we can't have raccoons. It's all part of the game.
That's one person I don't want back on the show is a raccoon.
I think we'll get Jorge back.
I would love to have Jorge back. I also, guys-wise, I think I'm with you with Kirk. I don't think Carly will do reality TV again after getting crushed on national television. That's probably not something you want to experience again. You've heard our take. Anybody here, or do you want kind of a new breed?
I wouldn't mind a new breed. It's almost like we've given 5 weeks to Ashley I, and we're just going to just cry and talk about our virginity again for 5 weeks. I mean, Samantha, I think we're just feeding the beast, keep putting her on TV. I don't know. I mean, you know, half the cast is going to be come on, but you know, it's going to be made of people who we meet in the next 12 months.
Who we haven't met yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So. I don't know. That's the kind of thing with this show. It doesn't really lend itself to people coming to keep coming back because then you're like, well, you're just bad at making boyfriends and girlfriends. I think they should do themed Bachelor in Paradises, like the single moms and the single dads all try to find love.
Didn't we do that this summer?
Yeah. Next summer. It's called you got to have a kid to make it on Bachelor in Paradise.
They could definitely pull that off. And I wouldn't mind, and he would fit this mold. I was going to say we could bring JJ back for sure,
yeah.
And he fits that. So you know, any JJ appearance, I'm all in favor.
And I think JJ would come back.
But you have to bring the kids on the vacation, so the kids are like mingling, like playing in the beach and shit and stuff like that.
So we need a daycare run by Jorge.
Yeah.
They tried that. I feel like little Ricky joined Emily Maynard on every moment.
in the Bachelorette.
Yeah, and you know, they definitely mixed her in as much as they possibly could. It can work.
So we mentioned Kirk and Carly in the bomb that he drops, and things started getting pretty real here. They had a full week when we got down to those final 10. Everybody's getting a fantasy suite date, and he drops a bomb on her. He feels really bad about it, and I think he really did. I think he maybe didn't handle the situation the best, but I think he thought he was doing it and thought he was doing the right thing. She shut down, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I thought about this long and hard, because I think Kirk is a good guy, and I felt like all of a sudden he was being portrayed as a dirtbag, and I tried to figure out if he had done anything wrong. The most I could say is perhaps he could have said something sooner, like when she said, oh, I want to see you at Zach's wedding.
Zach's reception, yeah.
Hold on. But basically, where I come down is anytime you tell any guy 5 weeks into a relationship that you can't wait to have kids and get yes, and whether that's on TV, not on TV, whatever, bad food.
And not to put context around it either.
Well, I don't have kids with you in
5 years.
I did think, though, that her relationship with Jade seemed very real and admirable. I mean, the minute Kirk destroyed her and she went running up the stairs, she was calling out for Jade, and Jade's heart was there. I mean, she really was sad for her.
They did spend pretty much an entire season of Bachelorette together. I think you could definitely develop some solid friendships being on Bachelor or Bachelorette if you're not involved in cattiness or fighting or other things like that. You may even get something as special as what JJ and Clint had.
See, we just talked about, you know, the real challenge. You know, would you watch a 30-minute like sideshow? Like, would you watch a 30-minute sideshow on just like the inner workings of the house of the Bachelor and the Bachelorette? Like, you know, what's happening when they're on their date? Like, what's everyone else doing? Are they becoming friends? Are they hating each other? Like, what's going on?
And particularly for Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah,
what you're saying? Matt, do you have something?
No, you froze up for a sec.
Yeah.
I'm doing my DJing over here. I'm on the ones and twos. You know, I like to mix things up on the podcast. She was harsh, though. When they broke up, the don't look at me, I hate you. My question here about this, is this the messiest breakup in all of the franchise's history?
Can't be worse than what Mesnick pulled on... I'm blanking on... This is embarrassing.
With Molly and Melissa Rycroft.
Yeah, Rycroft, right, sorry. It can't be worse than that, because although that was fun to watch, but he proposed and then dumps her on live TV at the first chance they've been together since the proposal, and immediately asks out the other girl, which you know, spiraled Melissa into a huge career on Dancing with the Stars, and then, you know, I think she does other
hosting
stuff. Yeah. So that worked out well for everybody, but that was colder, I think.
I don't even think it was in the top four. I could think of four. You know, that one that Matt just talked about, I think Juan Pablo's last two breakups, you know, one with Claire and the other with...
Nikki the Nurse.
Not Nikki, but who's before... what's her name? The Bachelorette.
Oh, Andy. Like,
Andy. Those were both horrible breakups. And then Andy and Nick, when they're at taping the final rose, and he's like, well, why'd you F me like we were a couple? He was like, so, I don't know. I think there's a tons of that. I think that, you know, it gets really intense when it becomes the final couple people in the show. I think this is just another example of that, that the longer you're in this environment, the more intense your relationship gets.
I agree. I actually think, now that I think about it, Caitlin and Nick, as much as I, you know, I've never been a fan of Nick, but Caitlin and him was pretty cool, too.
Oh, you mean you're not a Nick fan? I thought everybody loved that guy.
It's interesting because I meet people who actually do love him. And I'm like, when I hear a girl say she likes Nick, I'm kind of like,
I don't get it at all.
I have nothing to say after that.
It's a showstopper. And the one breakup that really came to mind for me was what happened with Brooks and Desiree.
Oh, yeah.
In Fiji, where he was the one, and she had said that.
That's right.
And more or less almost said it to Chris, who she's... Are they married? Or I don't know if they're married yet. That was highly awkward and really weird, but I do think this was pretty messy because it seemingly came from a good place, and then Carly just shut it down. So, interesting final days in paradise. I was hoping maybe they'd be on the same flight home together.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they still haven't spoken.
Yeah, but everyone was kind of reeling from that and planted some seeds of doubt with existing relationships, and that led us to the fantasy suites. Justin and Cassandra don't go to the fantasy suite. It's something new for this franchise.
Yeah, it was. And I don't know what, I mean, first of all, I'm perplexed again by everyone's attraction to Justin. But Cassandra seemed like she wanted to take things slowly. Maybe the whole, yeah, NBA player thing. I don't know. But she definitely, she was not there for him. And apparently she's now dating Jonathan, so I guess that's good.
And they seem to be really happy, which seems to be a huge error on the behalf of the Bachelor production crew. Maybe you could have put some things together that maybe those two would have been attracted to one another. I don't know. But do they fill out those cards that say who they want to be on the show with.
Right. Yeah, they orchestrated every other possible connection. They could have figured it out.
Well, and those two, both single parents again. So, anyhow, well, with the, I mean, Justin and Cassandra don't go to the fantasy suite. Did we or did we not see Becca go to the fantasy suite?
I think she went.
Yeah, I mean, I think so there are certain assumptions that are drawn or connotations that are assigned by the Bob Guineas of the world. Right. That discourage some people from wanting to go learn more about this person without a camera filming you? I don't know.
You're never forced to do anything, I would imagine. Unless is the Bachelor, I don't know. I don't think we've got anything to worry about.
Yeah. Tanner and Jade obviously went to the fantasy suite with their morning after robes. Tinley wasn't so sure she could be with Joshua. A couple great highlights for Tinley here to cap her, probably her reality TV reign. Saying that the whole situation sucked balls, totally big balls. And then the situation where she pretty much tore her dress off in the credits. I don't know if it was Sunday's or Monday's episode, but a fan favorite for a long time. She's gone. We wrap this whole thing up. Cassandra and Justin, they go for it. We now know Cassandra and Jonathan are together. Sam and Nick, I know we touched on it. Does this have any staying power?
I don't think so, although, I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't. They seem to have talked beforehand and liked each other. I've always thought Nick's like, girls should like him more than they have on these shows. And Samantha, I don't know. I mean, she maybe she's not as bad as she came off. I don't know. But my guess is, no, they're done in a couple weeks.
And, Dan, does this not make sense that Samantha, who's kind of the conniving, devilish one on the show, is sticking together with the guy that stabbed everyone in the back and stole $250,000 2 years ago?
Maybe. I mean, it's just always hard how they – you know, it's hard to tell what – so we know that Nick actually did something to earn his bad boy reputation. But Sam really – I don't. It's hard to know if it was just the way they cut it or, like, did she really do anything bad? Not really. She dated some guys on a – you know, when she was on vacation. And she's actually found a guy who, you know, has a little pocket change now. So good for her.
Yeah, good for her. I will bring I ask about the messiest. Was Tinley's breakup with Joshua not arguably the smoothest breakup ever on this show? She handled it so well. It was typical Tinley, in my opinion. And I don't think it could have gone any better to come out smelling like roses while breaking up with a guy from Idaho that you really have no chance of making it with anyway.
Well, it makes sense. She's like, hey, we don't live in the same state. We got our own things going on. I don't see how this is going to work. All right, that makes sense.
but definitely said it much nicer than that. Pulled it off. We got the whole proposal. But no Neil Lane.
I know.
They did flash his name in big...
In the box, yeah.
Is it a legitimate bachelor proposal if he's not there?
Maybe, like you
say.
Go ahead.
No. I mean, I think it was, I guess, just for suspense. I imagine they, but they teased it throughout, so I guess they could have brought him out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall for me, very entertaining season of Bachelor in Paradise. I wish they'd make a few tweaks, maybe more Paradise Hotel-esque tweaks to make it a little more exciting once people start trying to pair off. Looking forward to another season of this. You guys' thoughts, is this better or worse than last season, better or worse than Bachelor Pad? What do you want to see in the future?
I still think it's better than last season, but I think worse than Bachelor Pad. I'm the only one that, well, maybe not the only one, but I appreciated Bachelor Pad. I like the competitive element. I loved the prisoner's dilemma at the end, especially when Nick did what he should have done. I stand by that decision. But it seemed like there was more focus going on there. Here, I guess you can appreciate the fact that they just sit around, drink, and hook up. But like the end, it was just like, okay, I guess they've arbitrarily decided this is the last week, so goodbye. But I guess that's, you know, the fun of the show. So I have no problem with this. I would like to see another season.
Okay, Matt, we do this at the end of every Bachelor Bachelorette season. Will, and I want to get your response, will Jade and Tanner be together by the season premiere of The Bachelor?
I think January.
I think they will. I believe in them.
Will they be so married by then?
Sounds like they want a quick one.
They can't fit that into the ABC schedule.
Maybe they don't really do these weddings anymore. Maybe they'll get married next season in Mexico.
They'll either do that or sooner. They could get married, you know, at the end of The Bachelor or, you know, beginning of The Bachelorette. They'll televise it, I would think.
15 minutes of the men tell all.
You're right.
After the final rose.
I think they'll be broken up by the men tell all.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
I got them together. I got them going to the altar together.
Oof. We should put this on the fit. This should be a new fantasy category we can do.
Yeah, I've never gone that far before, Dan. I usually give you a, yeah, they'll be together, no, they won't. I'm saying they're actually going to get married because they had a lot of time together before getting engaged, way more than any other couple has had when they get engaged on this show.
I have to say, yeah, I agree, but their time was in paradise, like on a beach with some guy giving them drinks whenever they wanted to. You got to sleep in. Let's see how reality kicks in, and you have to, like, work and your life sucks and everything else.
Yeah, there's always that. But I think they seemed, like, pretty solid. You know, better than some of the couples we've seen stay together.
All right. Well, the Gauntlet's it's recorded. It's available on the internet now.
The Gauntlet has been thrown down. Before we wrap up this season of Bachelor in Paradise, you know what we got to do? We got to take a look at our scores over on fantasy4reality.com that Matt provides for us every week. Bachelor in Paradise, final scores. My You Only Paradise Once, Dose Squad, 3,080 points to Dan's Paradise Lost Squad, 1,970 points. So I've won two in a row after losing like six in a row. So excited about that. While we're talking about it, Matt, what do we have on the horizon for the fall season on Fantasy 4 Reality?
So first quick thoughts on this past season. I'm always looking to add some new rules into the mix. I think next year you'll get some points for breakup speeches being delivered. I think you'll also obviously get some points, now that this seems to be a trend, for proposing. So, and getting engaged. Any of that, you'll get some major points. So,
what about talking to inanimate objects or non-human?
I think, yeah, I mean, that seems to be a trend, too. I can consider that one. And then, you know, coming up in the fall, like I said, we got Survivor, we've got Amazing Race, we've got Dancing with the Stars. And look, eventually the challenge will come out. I don't know exactly when the premiere date is. And we'll probably do Shark Tank again, which we did last spring. It already started, so we got to get that up quickly. But I think for that one, you just pick a judge or a team of judges, and you get points, or sharks, whatever. You get the point. You get a team of sharks, and then based on what happens on a given episode, you get points.
With Survivor, obviously, I know Dan and I, we just go half and half on them, or whatever the numbers break out to. It breaks out 10 and 10 this year. Do you guys do anything where 20 people select one person apiece or anything like that for like an office pool or anything like that?
We haven't done it that way. We've tended to sort of favor the trying to get as many people involved as long as possible approach. So I actually think that the two-team, 10-contestant leagues work better than, say, a Survivor pool. Survivor pool. You know, I can think about whether someone would be interested in that. You'd have to have, you know, in this season it can work well because we know who these people are. So you have some sense of who might do well. And you could really sort of back the person you believe in. But for a season where you don't know anyone, I don't know. It might be sort of random how you just get eliminated right away.
Very true, yeah. I mean, it's always a crapshoot when you're drafting people from this show. And for the most part, on the Bachelor Bachelorette franchise, where you just have some bios to go read and look at their headshots and see how old they are. Right. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. While we're talking about Survivor, you want to talk a little bit of Survivor real quick?
Sure.
So we have 20 people coming back, and these aren't your big stars. These are all people who have only been on one time and haven't won. Some of them have gotten a little closer to the end than others. Who do we like on this season? And actually, who are we most excited about being on this season, I guess, is my best question.
So, for me, my most excited people are Fishback. Some reason I'm excited about Kelly Wentworth. I think she got a real raw deal that season. She seemed so promising, and then her father just kind of cut her down.
He kind of crapped out, didn't he? Like, couldn't go any longer?
He made a bunch of enemies, and in order to target him, they got rid of her.
I think you're right.
And then, you know, the Spencers and Joes, I think I'm excited about. Vetus, I really like. I am less excited about Wu's return or Keith's return. Don't love Cass, although I suppose she could stir things up. Never respected Sierra or Abby Maria. You guys?
So that's pretty conclusive. Dano, what do you... Dano, I know you're newer, but there are a lot of people here on the roster from the last 4 or 5 seasons when you got into this.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It'll be... I think it'll just be interesting. I think this will be my first full season of all new people to see how they compete against... how new people can... All returning people... play against returning people. Like, I've seen a season where it's like half returning, half new, and you could see the manipulation, but this will be cool to see returners against returners.
Yeah, this is definitely a first for you, Daniel. And for me, as far as people I like here, Wu's top of my list. I love the guy. I think he's great TV. I like the whole ninja vibe that he gives in his interviews. Another person I'm really excited to see, and it kind of fits a mold of several people here, and that's the mold of, it's been a really long time since I've been on reality TV. We saw it with Jervis a few seasons ago, when he was there on Blood vs. Water with his niece. But we get Kelly Wigglesworth from season 1, who pulled maybe one of the biggest backstabs in the franchise's history on Sue Hawk, which prompted one of the greatest speeches in the show's history. But then we also have Jeff Varner from season 2, Andrew Savage from season 7. So these people are now 37, 49, 51 years old. When Kelly Wigglesworth, we saw her, when this show started in what, 2001?
I think 2000, yeah.
Or 2000, so 15 years ago. So we saw her when she's 22 years old. Now we're going to see her when she's 37 years old and see the difference in her play and the difference in the very large tattoo she had on the small of her back. So we'll see what happens with that as well. Those are some of the ones I'm excited about. Let's talk so that's excitement. You kind of touched on who you're not excited about being there. One other person that I'm a little curiosity has piqued is Tasha did really well just a couple seasons ago, and Kagyan, I believe is how you pronounced it. A little intrigued about her. Who do we think are the contenders to win? So maybe give me 2 or 3, so not necessarily your favorite people as far as fandom. Who do we like to win this thing?
It's interesting. I'm trying to decide whether I think it's somebody who played really well or I think is really strategic and will last, or somebody who is just going to fly under the radar for a while being mediocre because they don't pose a threat and then sort of win in the end because people like them. So, for instance, like Joe, I think, will go out quickly. You know, I think the minute they have a chance to take him out, they'll do it. And that could happen to Spencer the same way. So, and someone like Keith, I think there's just like zero chance anyone would want to vote him out. Win. Maybe someone like Savage or Spencer. I would hope Vetus. I'm rooting for Vetus.
Dano?
I was thinking Spencer. I think he's one of those guys who can do a little bit both. He can wait. He looks like he kind of bulked up a little bit with some muscle on. I think he can kind of fly under radar when need to be, but also win when he has to.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be somebody that's got the physical game and the social game to go with it. Admittedly, I skipped somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 seasons. Matt, how far do you go back on Survivor?
Interesting. I'm sort of like you. I watched the first however many, then I stopped. Then I came back to it around the time we got into Fantasy for Reality. And so I've seen at least the last 10 or 12. And then my cousin, who watched them all, would reference people that I didn't know, and I would feel like I needed to catch up. So I went back and watched
some Survivor.
Yeah, I watched some of the classic seasons that I missed. And then, so I don't know. I've probably seen a little over half.
Yeah, and there are some definite, there's one season that I really want to see that I didn't see, and that was the one just prior to me coming back to it, and that's the one that Kim Spradlin won. Dan and I were in Austin, Texas. She's from here. She actually went to the same high school I did. And largely, it's thought of, I think, as one of the best Survivor games ever played. So I would like to go back and see that one, and it's ironic that it was the one just prior to me coming back to watching the show. To tie things back in, I think Kelly Wentworth might make some noise here this season as far as being a strong competitor. And I'm with Dan, and this doesn't happen very often. I think Spencer could be good if he's not viewed as a big target right away. And a sleeper pick is Jeremy the Firefighter from Massachusetts, who didn't have a real good go-around, and I think it was largely because he was there on Blood versus Water, and his wife, I think, got sent to Redemption Island or whatever we were calling it on that season early, and things didn't shake out for him. So a couple picks and then a sleeper, but if I had my way, Wu would win the thing.
Unbelievable. Wu threw it away. He could have easily won that thing, and because of his like moral compass or code or however he wants to phrase it, keeps Tony around, and Tony slaughters him. So I have no sympathy for Wu.
He's like the Asian Dalai Lama, or the what am I looking for here? He's like Dexter. He lives by the code,
right?
And he has this code for Survivor, and I don't know. I just love him on TV. I like him being on the show, and for as long as he can entertain me, that's what I want.
Well, I think he has a decent shot of sticking around for a number of reasons, but. There are. He's one of the, as far as I can tell, one of the three better physical competitors. Him, Joe, and there's one other.
Vetus?
Yeah, Vetus is pretty good. And who was the other guy that I think is great? No, that might be it. Could be, you know, Jeremy's pretty good. Spencer has a shot at things, but... Wu, he has like his athletic skills are perfectly made for this show. It's like balance and agility and, you know, things that matter in these Survivor challenges more than sort of like your typical athleticism that Jeff Kent had but didn't really do anything with until the base. He had that one challenge where he was out in the field catching fly balls, running around with a net.
Yeah, and Wu also a likable guy, so makes him that gives him a few different aspects. So the only drawback is he's not the most intelligent one on the cast. So I'm looking forward to it. Matt will definitely be playing Fantasy for Reality for Survivor. Love to have you back once we get cranking with Survivor and talk about our thoughts on the season so far. But until then, thanks for being on. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. That would be great. I'd love to come back, talk some Survivor. Love talking Bachelor in Paradise. Hopefully down the road, talk some more Bachelor or Bachelorette. Anytime.
Outstanding. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Good night.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Matt for joining us from fantasy4reality.com. I appreciate that and all the things they do over there. Dan, let's go ahead and knock out some Big Brother here real quick. Run a little long on Bachelor in Paradise and Survivor, but Big Brother, some interesting things this week. James was the one that went home coming into the week. Why was it important for him to be the one that went home?
I don't think it was. I think it's important for the Austin Knights or whatever to get rid of people, and so... You know, that's one less person they have to compete with. He was probably one of the stronger competitors.
And so Steve won HOH. He makes the decision. He puts Austin and Liz on the block. And before we kind of talk about the way the week is shook out, do you have a rooting interest alliance-wise or player-wise at this point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of the twins and Austin, so I guess, and I don't like Vanessa either, to tell you the truth. So, you know, now I'm in Johnny Mac's and Steve's corner.
Right. Yeah. Early in most of the season, I was in the Sixth Sense Alliance. I was kind of in that corner, and I really transitioned. I'm with you, except I think Vanessa, if she gets to the end, should win this thing. I feel like she's really engineered the best game, like her or hate her. So I'm with you plus Vanessa. I like that group of three, the Steve, Johnny Mac, and Vanessa group. They Austin did win the veto comp, but during that veto comp, this Bowl Arena comp this week, Vanessa kind of pulled another one of the things that I think make her a great game player here. How did she convince Julia to pick Austin to play against in the comp and narrow their chances of winning?
I don't think the twins are that smart. So I think
So
when they're in the middle of a game and you tell them, like, hey, this is the best, they probably just listen. They probably didn't process. They didn't really think it out.
Yeah, that was one of the best Jedi mind tricks ever pulled on this thing. That was Kaiser Soze.
I don't even think it was a Jedi. I think that's the thing. I don't think it was a Jedi mind trick. I think just a plain, she told them what, you know, she wanted them to do, and they did it. They didn't think about it.
Well, the thing that drove me nuts this week, and this was really the only thing I really wanted to talk about on Big Brother, is how the twins are so feeble-minded that, and I think it's more Julia than it is Liz, that they're like, I can't believe Steve has turned his back on us and this and that, and we had a deal. And do they realize that there's only six people left in this house? That they can't all win? And that they all came on the show to win? It reminds me of a quote from Ari Gold. It's not called show friends. It's called show business. And do they just not get this, Dan?
I think sometimes it's hard getting caught up when you're in the house with these people, right? Like, I think if you took a step back, and I think Austin might be taking that step back right now, but you become, you know, you're living day and night with these people, and they're the only people you're talking with. They're the only people you have with the outside world, you know. So sometimes I think they forget that it's a game, not a show.
Right. So the twins on the block against one another. So I'm going to assume Liz is going home because that's what makes most sense for the house. She takes out the kingpin that has a tie to both, because I don't think Austin's going to be loyal to Julia unless he needs to be. Out of the let's call them five that are remaining. We're recording this on Thursday night, so I haven't watched the Thursday night eviction episode yet. But out of those five remaining, if you're a jury member and it's a final five, who do you vote to win out of the final five?
I think Johnny Mac. I think the fact that he got evicted and came back, and if he can still get to the final two, I think is a big accomplishment.
Agree on that as well. I don't think Julia or Steve deserves to win. I've waved my towel for Vanessa, obviously. But I think Austin's played a pretty good game as far as controlling different things that are going on. Of course, some big help from Vanessa there. Everyone in the jury house has been sent home by that our former alliance.
Do you think Steve is playing the Andy game from a couple seasons ago?
No, Andy played an actual better game, I think, than Steve. I think I was surprised. I didn't realize, like, Steve was so young until he won head of household this week, and he's like, "Yeah, it's 3 years ago at a high school prom or graduation."
I don't know. It just seems like Andy played the same game a couple of years ago, where he just kind of hung. You know, you didn't know he was even on the show until like the second to last week.
The rope-a-dope.
Yeah,
it so, could be. I'm still enjoying the season. I think it's better than the last one or two seasons we've had for sure.
What did you hear? Did you hear the comments from Les Moonves?
Nah, what did Mr. Julie Chen have to say?
So the guy who oversees CBS, apparently he has a lot of say in the cast of Big Brother. And he says, sometimes they get it right and sometimes they get it wrong. And he thinks they got it wrong 5 or 6 times this season.
This season?
Yeah, he's not happy with this season.
He doesn't like this cast.
No, he hates like 5 to 6 of the cast. He didn't say who. But wow. he threw some major shade at Big Brother.
Wow. I wonder if that's coming from his wife and she can't say it, but he can.
He made it sound like he's pretty involved in the casting of this show. And he said that he is not happy with what's going on. He's not a fan of this season.
Well, by all accounts, it has to be better than, what was it, 2 seasons ago where we had all of the racial tension and comments.
Was that 2 seasons or last season?
That was 2 like seasons ago, wasn't it? That was with Aaron. She wasn't on last season. Was Beast Mode Cowboy and things. And I can't even remember.
I think that the problem with that, though, is, like, from his perspective, like, any, like, you know, PR is good PR. You know, so, like, at least Big Brother was in the news. Like, you don't really, outside of, like, the reality world, no one's talking about Big Brother.
Yeah, it didn't kill him last season when they came back. So, yeah, I guess you're right. No harm, no foul. Yeah, last season was the one where Derek, the cop, won it. And it was 2 summers ago when – drawing a blank now, but that was when we had Macranda and Rachel Riley's sister and others, but a lot of controversy. There was the big guy Spencer that was also involved in the controversy. So Big Brother weathers storms and maintains. And
so here's Les Moonves' quote. He talked about previous that he signs off on the cast of Big Brother.
Okay.
And basically he says, you know, the interviewer said, early on the cast seemed pretty promising. And he says, I agree. Usually you have 1 or 2 disappointments. I think we've had 5 or 6 disappointments. Another discussion. He basically is like, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Wow.
So he's probably talking about people like current people who are either currently in the house or just left, because he made it sound like at the beginning he liked, you know, there was people there. That means they got rid of the people he liked, and now the current people he's not happy with.
Yeah, he probably likes Shelley and Clay.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, then maybe he just needs to pick a prettier cast if that's what he's going with.
I don't think it's pretty. It's not just prettier. I think more interesting. You know, there could be a lot of things.
I bet 2 of the people he doesn't like are the twins.
I think the twins and off. I mean, I think, I don't know. I could point at what I dislike about a lot of people, but
Johnny Mac is great TV. I think Austin and Vanessa are good gameplay. It's going to be interesting to see what shakes out. I think we just have 2 weeks left of the show. So
22nd or something like that. So 23rd is the last episode.
Yeah, so the 2 weeks out. Today's the 10th.
That seems late, though. That's like...
Yeah, it usually goes a couple weeks into football season, and then they're done, and Survivor and Amazing Race start up right when it's over.
It just doesn't make it a summer show. I don't know. It just seems like they could cut off probably about 3 or 4, you know, 3 weeks of the show.
Yeah. So anyhow, we'll wrap that up here as the season rounds out. Before we go, Dano, we'll remind everybody where they can find us online.
You can hit us on Twitter at AfterRealityPod or like our Facebook page, The After Reality TV Podcast.
And you're on Twitter at Daniel Oler, OEHLER. You can find me at SpencerK11. And until we see you next time, we remind you, we like bears and Mexican food right here on the After Reality TV Podcast.